I was talking about imagination with the writer Elizabeth Knox earlier. And if you use yours right now, you might be able to imagine a world after COVID-19 has run its course, because it will, either because we've all caught it and hopefully survived it, or because we will have a vaccine to protect us from it. In such a world, New Zealand will once again be a place many people will want to migrate to. My next guest recently investigated how we are doing at welcoming newcomers. Her name is Cynthia White. She's the head of humanities at Massey University, as well as being professor of applied linguistics. And she's on the line from, I think, Palmerston North right now. Kia ora, Cynthia.
Kia ora. How are you? Yes, I'm from Palmerston North.
You are in Palmy. What prompted your research, Cynthia? Because you are, after all, a linguist.
Yes. So I've gotten, in linguistics, I think one of the issues is that language itself can be quite a gatekeeper in terms of settling and belonging. So I think there's the link between migration and language is really a critical one for many people who come. And sometimes people don't realise how much that the role it plays in migration and settlement. So for this project, we were interested in the Palmerston North City Council was interested in to what extent Palmerston North is a welcoming community for the quite significant numbers of refugees we have in Palmerston
North. Yeah.
And also immigrants. And they approached me at the university to work with them on this project. So that and it links to my earlier interest as well.
Because
so
it's clear.
I'm really pleased to do that. Mm.
When we go to Palmerston North quite a lot because my partner loves the place, and because I met my partner when she was living in Palmerston North, I've got a soft spot for Palmerston North now, and it's not too far from Wellington. And we take our son up there, and he goes on the train, you know, the miniature train.
Yeah.
Which is down at, Fitzherbert Gardens? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Esplanade.
When you go to the playground that the train takes you to, you will see just how diverse the population of Palmerston North has become. It's a real melting pot.
Yeah, it is. And I often go to the Esplanade, and I find it quite moving seeing people very clearly enjoying nature there, and the flowers, and taking photos, and having picnics, and people with their families, and I think that says something about really what we found in this project is that one of the ways in which people begin to feel at home is actually through nature, like particularly growing a garden. Or also enjoying the flowers and the trees and the seasons. And that, along with actual people feeling very safe, was another key factor in feeling at home, an area where they were sort of, the environment was considered relatively safe, relatively pollution-free. People felt politically safe. They felt safe in their homes. So, I think the Esplanade there, that does also play spaces for children where people can mix.
Mm. And that playground is fantastic. It's a lovely playground, and there's a whole variety of things that children can do, some more adventurous than others, some that the adults can try out themselves, as I have.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the one I really like is, you know, the flying fox, yes, but it's that big treadmill thing, you know, the big circle, like a barrel. You go inside and you kind of try to walk along and not go up the barrel and fall on your backside. You know the one I mean?
Yes, you can entertain your child when you do that.
Oh, I most certainly did. Yeah. Now, but this was Palmerston North, one of five cities that tried out something called Welcoming Communities?
Yeah, so Welcoming Communities is actually an international initiative. So there are projects linked around the world. So in different European countries, Canada, Australia, and so on. And it was really built or established in recognition that settlement, that communities themselves, the sort of the receiving community in a sense, has a role to play in settlement. So Immigration New Zealand has established 5 centres in New Zealand. So we have Ashburton, Whanganui, Invercargill, Palmerston North, and I think the other one's Tauranga. And each of those is a welcoming community. So, and basically that means that the local council develops initiatives to make sure, for example, that public spaces are welcoming, that there's opportunities for connected and inclusive communities, inclusive leadership, and so on. And Palmerston North Council is very active in this area and has contributed to the research that we've actually carried out.
You looked at the experience of people coming to Palmerston North, right?
Yeah.
And what did you find? What was the response?
Really interesting. So we were interested in what made people, as I say, feel at home, what made people, and over time, what made people feel they belonged were the particular moments when they felt they belonged. I've already mentioned safety, but another really interesting thing for people was the opportunity for, you know, what you can call civic engagement, so voting, volunteering, citizenship ceremonies, those kind of quite public facing roles that people carry out where they participate as a member of society, that was actually very important for people. Another area was owning your own home or getting permanent housing of some form and having the opportunity to make connections within your own community and to help others settle. Actually, interestingly, in this research, I was joined by Hannah Brookie, who is from Sweden, has been in New Zealand, I think, almost 20 years. And she carried out quite a lot of the interviews. She works with refugees and immigrants too. And at the same time, she was quite interested in what was happening in Sweden, where she is from, for refugees. So it was quite interesting to compare those two contexts. But I think in New Zealand, although we have fewer refugees, the events of March the 15th were quite obviously shocking for everybody involved. But the people we spoke to said that it was the response of the New Zealand public which made them feel quite much safer and more accepted. So that was something that came out in the interviews.
This was the response of the New Zealand public, what, after those attacks in Christchurch?
Yes, after that feeling of, you know, we're with you on this, yes. So I think the communities we spoke to were quite surprised with that.
I felt very
heartened.
You mentioned earlier, Cynthia, the role of language in migration. Yeah. So how does that, people who are becoming to, New Zealanders, we aren't the most linguistically literate people, are we, on the whole? I mean, I can barely speak English, let alone any other language, and I'm going to try to learn Te Reo, but, you know, I'm not good at languages, and I'm not alone in that as a Euro Kiwi.
Yeah, that's right. So most New Zealanders are fairly monolingual, you know, and I think that means if you already know more than one language, it's easier to learn, you know, to pick up a third. So if you know two, then it's easier to pick up a third or a fourth. So I think the issue is many people who are monolingual don't realise how difficult it is to learn a language, which is a very long way away from your own. So for some people who come as refugees, they might have had very little schooling. Or if they have some schooling, they've learnt quite a different writing system. So the distance they have to travel is a very long way to develop, a working proficiency in English. What was interesting in the study, we found that people who had to acquire English as well, for them they felt settlement was put on hold for a very long time, so for several years before they could get that working level of proficiency, and then they felt they could really begin to settle.
What, because they hadn't learnt English, or because they had to learn English in order to get a job?
Yeah. I think it's that if they haven't learned English beforehand, it's a very long process to learn another language. When you also may be dealing with, in some cases, people were dealing with a degree of trauma or a sense of alienation, if they, depending upon the circumstances that had brought them to New Zealand. I remember the case of one refugee, a young person who came as a teenager with her sibling and had to start high school and in Palmerston North and didn't know the language and had no other older family members there. So you can imagine that sense of alienation when you don't have a support structure around you. However, she did progress and do very well eventually, but it's a very long route to settlement and belonging. And I think that's an interesting way to think of belonging. We sometimes think you belong based on your roots, your original roots, but actually I think belonging also comes from the roots you've taken, in other words, the paths that you create.
In Palmerston North, how easy was it for refugees who couldn't speak English, how easy was it to learn the language? How many facilities, how much resources was available for people who wanted to learn English?
Yep. So Hannah, who I mentioned, she works at English Teaching College there. She's director, and they have had developed programs and provided tuition and settlement and help with settlement for a very long time and coordinate well with other groups such as the Red Cross. So for people who come, there are quality learning experiences available. But at the same time, people had quite often other concerns. So maybe health issues, or that was a key one, health issues. And maybe concerns about schools or issues with neighbours or worries about bills and so on. And they were very reliant on the teachers to help with that. So the teachers in those settings have to be quite open to help. It's never just about teaching language. It's about you're the person there to help with an immediate issue.
Become a conduit. And how did the teachers handle that on the whole?
Yeah, that's interesting. So in 2018, we interviewed some of the teachers, and they were very willing to help. But one area that they found really difficult was when people clearly had mental health issues. Now, this is true across all of society. It's a difficult area. But for people who'd come to New Zealand and had traumatic life circumstances beforehand, there's no doubt that they are more vulnerable. So teachers found that a very difficult area to work in. Also, sometimes when students came and wanted them to keep things confidential. So that sense of the burden of that.
You mentioned at the start of the interview, Cynthia, how important for some refugees and migrants getting a connection with the natural world, with the seasons, with the flow of I guess, life in the new home. Helps to settle people. Does that to some extent help to compensate for the fact that we aren't particularly multilingual in New Zealand and that you really do have to get to talk to people, to have conversations with most New Zealanders, you need to learn English?
Yeah. I think that's right. I think nature was a huge one for people being able to grow, things in the garden. Somehow gave that it was a relatively easy connection with the environment, and one people felt they appreciated, and there could be satisfaction there. And that was, it was interesting. Another area linked to that was, that I haven't mentioned also, was actually family, particularly having children. There was one participant who said, when my son was born, New Zealand is his home now, so then that's my home. So it's that kind of, that route to belonging through your children. And for some people it was grandchildren, gave quite a picture of the future, a possible future.
You mentioned, carry on, Cynthia.
No, I finished. No.
Right, but there's now, you worked on this stuff with the background of the anniversary to the Christchurch mosque attacks.
Yeah.
And to
yeah.
some extent that anniversary has been swamped by COVID, the response to COVID-19. Now, that's probably going to shut us off from the outside world for a bit from most people. But at some point, we'll work through that and we'll get to the other side. As I said in the introduction, it will be interesting to see how we will look at people from overseas after COVID-19. It's going to be a bit of a challenge, do you think?
I think it could be. I think some of the participants did talk about a sense that they felt they were tolerated but not really accepted, and felt very uncomfortable about that, saying, you know, the people say, oh, we're very tolerant, but some of the participants see you tolerate something you don't really like. So I think the COVID-19, one of the things is, as New Zealand and areas close their borders now, I think we're going to have to reflect a good deal on our place in a globalised world. And I think after March the 15th, I think March the 15th raised a key challenge for us, which is coexistence. So how can different people live together, live alongside each other, each retaining their own identity and values? And I think we have some challenges around the world with that. And COVID-19 is part of that as well. I think people going into isolation, that's going to be very difficult. So I think this question of borders and security and well-being and coexistence, they're very real issues at the moment.
Cynthia, it's been fascinating talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Okay.
Bye. It's Cynthia White. She's the head of humanities at Massey University. Also Professor of Applied Linguistics, talking about how Palmerston North has accommodated migrants and refugees from overseas.